Track 13, The White Rajah. Chris Armstrong looks at the life of Sir James Brooke, the Norwich-educated first White Rajah of Sarawak and founder of a dynasty, a character who Errol Flynn wanted to play on film.
When you mention education in an article about James Brooke, you have to use the word very loosely. He came to Norwich Grammar School in 1816 at the age of 13 and remained there until he ran away 3 years later. Why the school was chosen for him is something of a mystery. He was the son of a senior official in the Honourable East India Company, who was also a High Court judge, and Brooke spent his early years in India at Benares. As was the custom then, he was sent home to be educated in England. Since his family later settled in Bath, and the grandmother to whose care he was entrusted lived in Surrey, the choice of Norwich seemed strange, and it didn't prove a sound one. At the time, the school was under the headship of the Reverend Valpy, and enjoying a period of expansion. Valpy was a highly academic classicist. Brooke was neither academically gifted nor interested in the classics. He was not happy at the school, and there are a number of probably apocryphal anecdotes about his activities there. But it was clear his efforts were not greeted with success, and he was apparently repeatedly caned for his idleness. Quote, in the History of Norwich School, published in 1991, he is described not just as unreceptive to the idea of learning, but also as adventurous, decisive, and popular with his fellows. Certainly, in his adult life, he lived up to the adventurous tag. Perhaps the only thing he learned in his time in Norfolk was how to sail, which was to be useful to him later. Given his decision to run away from the school, it seems ironic that in later life he chaired two dinners given for old boys of the Valpian era. Subsequent attempts at educating him by employing private tutors fared little better, despite the presence of his parents who had returned to England. Aged 16, he joined the East India Company in a military capacity as an ensign in the infantry, enjoying promotion to lieutenant 2 years later, and was promoted again during the First Anglo-Burmese War. His life of adventure had begun, and he was heavily engaged in the war around Assam. But his career might have been brief. He was badly wounded and was sent back to England to recover. When he had done so, he returned to Madras with the intention of resuming his military service, but found himself out of time, having exceeded the 5 years' leave he had been granted for recovery. Resigning his commission, he sailed back to England by a circuitous route via China and Malaysia, with which he was much taken. His parents were inclined to indulge their children. An older brother had already been given the elephant he requested, and James was spoilt too. They bought him a small brig with which he intended to enter the China trade, despite paternal warnings that he was not cut out for such a career. His father's prediction was correct. He was unsuccessful. A year later, his father died, leaving James something in the order of £30,000, over £3 million today. He bought a larger ship, the Royalist, and sailed for Singapore, perhaps seeking an opportunity to emulate Sir Stamford Raffles and expand British interests further. The Royalist was an armed schooner with half a dozen 6-pound guns, several swivel guns, and plenty of handguns too. She was entitled, as a member of the Royal Yacht Squadron, to fly the White Ensign. She must have been an impressive sight. Effectually, she was a warship in private, and very determined hands. Brooke himself described the ship as one which would fight or fly as occasion required, but under his command there was more fighting than flying. When he arrived in Singapore, Brooke set out on a career which was to propel him to the title of His Highness the Rajah of Sarawak, a state with which he and succeeding members of his family were to rule right up until 1946. From Singapore, he sailed first to Kuching, the capital of Sarawak. He went there at the request of Singapore's governor to thank Raja Muda Hassim, uncle of the Sultan of Brunei, for the safe return of some shipwrecked British sailors. A Arriving with the White Ensign flying and on a quasi-diplomatic mission, he was probably seen as an official representative of the Empire, which he was not. He was already aware that Sarawak's wealth depended on the export of antimony, an alloy with many uses ranging from the manufacture of mascara by the ancient Egyptians to its use in developing electronic products today. While there, he discovered that the trade was being badly affected by a rebellion against the Sultan, which Hassim had been sent to put down. After a few months exploring other parts of Southeast Asia, he returned to Kuching and supported Hassim's attempts to quell the rebellion. His authority and the value of his weaponry rapidly became clear, and he led Hassim's forces to victory over the rebels, storming their headquarters on the Sarawak River. A fine shot and horseman with previous military experience and an air of authority, he was a respected leader. Hassim had promised Brooke the governorship of Sarawak as a reward for putting down the revolution, but this wasn't implemented until, having received the support of the Sultan of Brunei, he trained the royalist main armament on Hassim's palace. In his new role, he sought to impose a more humanitarian approach, abolishing such practices as slavery and headhunting, while encouraging local involvement in government and ensuring religious tolerance. His immediate deputies, however, were mainly young Europeans, and although not all the indigenous population were supportive, most appreciated the new approach based on law and order. But he was far from satisfied. Piracy was still rife, and the coast was under frequent attack from the Dayaks, a separate Borneo tribe. He fought a series of campaigns, sometimes aided, perhaps not wholly officially, by the Navy. His support from the Sultan of Brunei wavered about this time, and Hassim and other Brooke allies were murdered on the Sultan's orders. He set out as part of a punitive expedition, and the Sultan, making reparations, ceded to the British the island of Labuan, a useful strategic base. Returning to London, Brooke found himself a hero and was made a Knight Commander of the Bath and appointed as Governor of Labuan. The government was, however, less inclined to recognise his royal status in Sarawak. His ambition continued unabated, and he expanded the territory of his kingdom by outwitting and defeating some of the Dayak tribes. He established a series of forts to frustrate continued Dayak piracy and continued his policy of, quote, civilizing colonization by establishing churches and schools. But his position was under threat from a different source. Some of the naval officers with whom he had cooperated became the subject of a parliamentary investigation into the sums of prize money awarded in respect of their joint expeditions. A full inquiry was set up in Singapore, and although Brooke himself was found not to have behaved as claimed with inhumanity and illegality, it must have been an embarrassing experience, and difficult to cope with, especially as he was suffering from smallpox. But then, although he managed to expand his territory still further with another acquisition from Brunei, things did not progress otherwise so well. With his separate state of Sarawak still not recognized by the British government, he even offered it unsuccessfully for sale to other European states, and soon after he retired to Devon. But Brooke had been just the first in a line of dynastic rajas, and having no legitimate issue, he was succeeded by his nephew Charles Brooke, having first disinherited Charles's older brother. In turn, Charles was succeeded by his son Viner, and then by Viner's brother Bertram, and finally by Bertram's son Anthony. Sarawak, occupied by the Japanese during the Second World War, subsequently only retained its independent status until 1946, when the British government, who had always had an ambivalent attitude to the rule of the White Rajas, took over and made it a crown colony, which it remained until gaining independence as part of what is now Malaysia. James Brooke was clearly a man of ambition, of daring do, but not without humanity in his treatment of indigenous peoples. Above all, he was a charismatic and effective leader at the front of his campaigns. He never married, although there was a rumoured engagement in his youth. A story at the time was that his original wound had not been in the lung, as is now generally accepted, but in the genital area, resulting in the breaking off of the engagement. A number of biographers have attributed his apparent disinterest in women to a sexual orientation towards other men, and there is superficial evidence to support this. One biographer said that, in retirement, Brooke had been carnally involved with the rough trade of totness. Despite this, he did not claim paternity of an illegitimate son, who died at sea. Whatever his sexual orientation, he was an extraordinary man both of action and of government. He seemed to have a softer side too. He was apparently prone to reading Jane Austen aloud to his staff. Whatever else his adventures did for him, they didn't make him wealthy. Having inherited £30,000 from his father, his own estate on death was just £1,000. His story is said to have been the inspiration for Conrad's Lord Jim, and its romance has led to a number of novels, Nicholas Montserrat's The White Raja being perhaps the best known. Later, there was a plan to film his story with Errol Flynn in the leading role, but in fact the only film about his story was not completed until 2021, entitled The Edge of the World.